You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Monday morning, January 9th. I had to think for a minute there. Cold outside. Maybe that's impeding my calendar thinking. But regardless, it is a Monday. And yeah, it feels like a Monday, but that's all right. God's grace is good. His mercies are new every morning. And I get to share the next couple of hours with you and looking forward to it. Planning originally to have a guest on at the bottom of the hour, my friend Dr. Alan Alday, who comes on, every few weeks to talk about behavior-related issues in families. I mean, for those families who have behavior-related issues, I mean, folks like you and me, but it's good to have him on to help those other families that have behavior issues. He's not a therapist or a counselor, but he does come on to talk about stuff from a behavior theory perspective. He's a professor, works a lot with schools, with families on issues related to behavior. So we'll get Alan on again. He's got a sick child, so we give him a pass on this one for having his priorities in order. So I hope everything goes well there at the Alday household, who are expecting a little Alday here pretty dang soon, from what I recall. So there's plenty of stuff that we can talk about today. It is the Feast of the Baptism of the Lord, falling on a Monday today. We'll talk about that a little bit. Also, how some martyrs invaded my morning shower. I have to keep you guessing on that one. A Christian response in Chicago. While there's more to the story than subjective guilt, and baptism is a type of foreshadowing. All that and more coming up on the program today. If you've got a comment or a question, I'll give you the question of the day in the next segment, but 573-4BREAD-4, you can call or text 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. We may talk a little football, too, from this past weekend, all that and more ahead. Hope you had a good weekend. I spent Saturday with 14 engaged couples, part of my full-time work with the Diocese of Lexington, teaching a marriage preparation class. Fortunately, it was miserably cold outside. I like it better when the weather stinks, when I have these couples together, because when it's beautiful outside, then I know they're a little restless and thinking about all the things they could do on a Saturday, except instead of sitting in the traffic school of marriage prep. Now, I'm sure some have a good attitude, but come on. I mean, for some, it is a requirement that they attend. Hopefully by the end of the day, they've seen it as more than that. But when it's cold and yucky outside, I'm like, what else are you going to be doing? Come on. So that was good. And a delightful group of engaged couples, always something kind of energizing about it, about being around young love. And yet at the same time, helping to, I think, expand. This is the beauty of God's plan for marriage, where it fits within his whole economy, what it means. They no matter how prepared they may be for marriage, marriage is so much bigger than we can imagine. Yes, there are challenges to come that they can't anticipate. Nobody can anticipate. It's like anything in life. There's a certain grace in God's timing in revealing the challenges to come. Otherwise, we might shrink back from the task at hand, whether that be parenthood, whether that be marriage, whether that be any vocation. We give our yes, and the full meaning of it unfolds later. But not only are there challenges that they don't anticipate, but there is a beauty and a depth to marriage, rightly understood, that they don't quite get. So I got to do that on Saturday, and then enjoy a little dinner out with the family Saturday night. Little Cracker Barrel, not bad. And then yesterday, actually, of course, going to Mass, celebrating the Epiphany of the Lord. Also had to take my son for his orientation. My son has a new job, 16-year-old, his first job, Wendy's. So I'm a little ticked off at him, though, because unlike my other children, who or the ones who were at home, who work at Chick-fil-A, who gives a family discount to relatives, family members of employees. There is no such discount at Wendy's. Or at least that's what he tells me. Maybe it's his strategy to keep his family from visiting him where he works. But he tries, he might. As soon as Lent rolls around and they break out that Pacific fish sandwich that they've got, Pacific cod filet, whatever it is. Good stuff. I'll be showing up, son, so be ready for it. Yesterday went to Mass. Of course, as I said, it was the Feast of the Epiphany. I guess you could say the close of the really high Christmas season. I mean, there's a lot of, I read a lot of different opinions about the Christmas season continuing on through Candlemas or the Feast of the Presentation of the Lord on February 2nd. In the liturgical calendar, it now says ordinary time. So the Epiphany ending, let's say, marking the end of the Christmas season. And at our parish yesterday, and I don't know how common this is, but there is a liturgical element and option as a part of the Mass on Epiphany Sunday. And I think it's also true on Christmas Day. Is that you can have a cantor, right, or a singer come up and announce the dates for the upcoming liturgical year. And last night's cantor, it's actually Jennifer, who works here at Breadbox Media, goes to my parish. It's the best parish in town, if anybody asks. But she comes up to the microphone and she starts singing, you know, "On March 1st, it will be Ash Wednesday." And then goes through, you know, "And then on the 16th of April, the resurrection of our Lord." And then they go through the whole calendar. It's pretty cool, really. You know, you get all the dates set. I remember a few years ago, my mother-in-law invited some of her relatives who weren't Catholic to go to Christmas Mass. And they went when they did that. And listen, if you're not Catholic, that's not like anything you're used to hearing in a Mass, for sure, you know. "And on the 15th day of June." Anyway, we were joking about this with my family. This kind of liturgical nerds that we are as a family. And my kids are now, you know, many of them old enough to. It's kind of fun. You're still their parent, but you're also, you just enjoy their personalities. Anyway, we were talking about weaving in some other dates into that liturgical song, you know, like, "And on the first day of April is April Fool's Day," or maybe something like, "And on the 5th of February is Super Bowl." So anyway, I don't know. I'm a little squirrely this morning, so you're going to have to bear with it. 573-4-BREAD-4. As I said, today is actually the Feast of the Baptism of the Lord. Now, typically, most years, evidently, it is its own particular Sunday. You know, as we talked about Friday, Friday, the 12th day of Christmas, traditionally the Epiphany, January 6th, but a decision was made, and I don't think this is true in all Catholic dioceses around the world, but I think in most in the United States, the Epiphany Sunday was changed to the closest Sunday to January 6th. And because of the way things fell this year, right, you had Christmas on a Sunday, then you had New Year's on a Sunday. And so you couldn't have Epiphany until the Sunday after the 6th. And when that happens, because the Baptism of the Lord is also designated in the liturgical calendar as being the Sunday after January 6th, they would both fall on the same day. And when that happens, of course, you can't have two feast days. And so what happens is the Epiphany of our Lord trumps the Baptism of the Lord. So rather than it going to the following Sunday, which then cuts out too much of your ordinary time schedule, it's moved to a Monday. It may be the case the next year as well, because next year Christmas is on a Monday, which means, let's see, bum, 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 Epiphany will be on I figure this out. The next year, Epiphany will be on, instead of being on the 8th, will be on the 7th. So it'll probably be the same case next year, too. Anyway, but it's a beautiful feast today, the baptism of the Lord. This moment in which our Lord left, in a sense, his hidden life. You know, I don't think we think about this often, of the 33 years-ish that Jesus lived here on this planet, that only 3 years were spent in his public ministry. And therefore, from age 0 to 30 is often called his infancy and his hidden life, because we certainly have in Matthew and Luke some accounts from his infancy, some limited accounts. The only account we have that's part of the canonical Gospels from his childhood is the finding in the temple at age 12. Other than that, we have nothing. And it was really the baptism of the Lord. It was his encountering John there at the Jordan, submitting to baptism, that ushered him into public ministry. And one of the things that oftentimes is not realized is that what the implications were, and we'll talk about this in the second hour, the implications of his baptism, not just in terms of what it said about his own mission, but also in terms of making him a public target. We don't think about that often. To associate himself with John the Baptist was in many ways a dangerous thing indeed, and foreshadowed some things to come, which we'll get into in the second hour. Question of the day when we come back from the break. This is the Mike Allen Show, and you are listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Minutes past the hour. You're back on the Mike Allen Show here on this Monday, January 9th, the feast of the baptism of our Lord, our own baptism, finding its meaning in his. It's also a birthday today, birthday of Dave Matthews of the Dave Matthews Band. He's 50 years old today. Man, he got his start pretty young. He's just 50, just my age. Anyway, my question of the day is, what is your favorite Dave Matthews song? And a lot of you have weighed in on Facebook on this. That's always an option through social media, Facebook or Twitter. You can also email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can call or text 573-4BREAD-4. So here's some of the responses. I have to say, I'm asking this question primarily for you. I'm not a big Dave Matthews fan or follower outside of my typical realm of classic country music, though I can recognize a talented musician and a talented band when I see one, that's for sure. But Kathy says Stay is her favorite song. Christy, she says, man, a toss-up between Ants Marching and Crash Into Me, the lyrics of which I realize are quite questionable. Also, Crush. Yeah, several mentioned Crush. Nana says, I usually can't stand Dave Matthews, but Crush is beautiful. John says, Two-Step, Hat Tip to Stolen Away on 55th and 3rd, live at Piedmont Park, Crush. And if we're just talking Dave Matthews songs, so damn lucky. And Stephanie says, Two-Step, especially after I heard it in concert. We'll share some of the others later. For me, you may be a big Dave Matthews song, never heard this song. But one of my favorite movies is the movie, the family film, Because of Winn-Dixie. There's just something about that movie. It's an emotionally powerful movie for me. Jeff Daniels plays this storefront, preacher whose wife leaves him with his daughter, played by Anna Sophia Robb, Opal. And they're trying to make their way in this small Florida town. And she befriends all these people in the neighborhood who are at the margins. Right? They you know, are just, there's an alcoholic woman. There's an older librarian who's never married. There's a grumpy man. There's, you know, she treats them with exquisite dignity. And she, I mean, there's this dog named Winn-Dixie, of course, that's a big part of the effect of the movie, but she brings them all together in a community. It's really a beautiful image, I think, in many ways, of the church, is what it is. Anyway, my kids tease me about this movie because I can't really talk about it without starting to cry. I'm becoming that old man who can just start crying at the drop of a hat. Have you ever met these guys? That's kind of where I'm becoming if you talk to me about the right things. Anyway, I digress. Dave Matthews is in that movie. He is one of these guys that this young girl, Opal, befriends. He works in a pet store. Anyway, but he sings this song in the film, just acoustically, called Butterfly. Oh, man, it's a beautiful song. Love that thing. Anyway, I don't even know if he's ever done it in concert. I don't even know if there's a recording you can find other than in the movie. It's really, really good. So that's my song. Anyway, but if you've got one you want to let me know, 573-4BREAD-4, call or text. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post your response on Facebook or on Twitter. While you're online, you want to learn more about Breadbox Media, just go to breadboxmedia.com, and you can learn more about what we do, all of our different contributors from coast to coast and across the heartland. Listen to podcasts. We have daily shows. We have weekend shows. All different temperaments, personalities, topics, and so forth. But that's the nature of the Catholic faith. We are quite an amalgamation of a whole lot of different things. But the one unifying thing, of course, is the pillar and bulwark of the truth, the Catholic faith, that holds it all together. So check it all out at breadboxmedia.com. Sports-wise, of course, the first weekend of the NFL playoffs happening. And, you know, probably no real big shocks. You know, you had the Houston Texans having the good luck of playing the Oakland Raiders without Derek Carr. And, boy, they were a different team without their all-pro quarterback late in the season, weren't they? And then also Saturday night, Seattle taking care of business against Detroit. Poor Lions fans, another season of suffering. And then you get into Sunday yesterday, Pittsburgh absolutely thumping the Dolphins and now looking like perhaps a legitimate threat to the Patriots in the AFC. And I guess so it's shaping up now. Alex, you follow this more than me. Houston's playing at New England, is that right? Okay, and so then Pittsburgh will host Kansas City. No, Kansas City will host Pittsburgh. Woo! Well, that Houston game won't be much to watch, but Pittsburgh, Kansas City, that'll be worth watching. And then last night, I'm just telling you, folks, 2 to 3 weeks ago, my son Ryan, who follows this stuff, he went on record as predicting a Green Bay Packers Super Bowl championship. Now, he's not a Packers fan, but of course, the Packers, since they were 4-6, have not lost. And last night, they thumped good. A pretty strong New York Giants team that beat the Cowboys twice this year. And now, yes, they do have to go to Jerry World to play down there. And who knows whether they'll have Jordy Nelson or not. But believe me, if there's a team used to playing shorthanded, it is the Green Bay Packers. And as long as you've got Aaron Rodgers, my friends, you've got a chance. And, of course, my favorite NFL player, Randall Cobb, former University of Kentucky, my alma mater player, came up big last night. So I think, you know, you Cowboys fans, you're starting a quarterback who's never played a playoff game, a rookie, and you're going up against the veteran, the grizzled veteran. If you can be a grizzled veteran at 32 or 33, whatever Aaron Rodgers is, should be a great game. And then, of course, tonight, the big game, Alabama-Clemson. We'll find out whether Nick Saban's decision to boot Lane Kiffin. I don't care how you spin it. That's what happened. His decision to boot Lane Kiffin out the door and to hand the reins over to the offense to Steve Sarkisian here in the week before the national championship game, we're going to find out. I mean, is Alabama such a juggernaut that they can withstand those kind of chemistry changes, or is it going to come back to bite them? Clemson's loaded for bear. They're wanting some revenge. Boy, I'm a little hamstrung in that, you know, I have to get up early in the morning, 4:45. How late will I stay up and watch this game tonight? So if I sound extra groggy in the morning, you'll know it was a great game, and you'll know that that I stayed up way too late. But I'll be pulling, even though I'm an SEC guy. I will be pulling for Clemson tonight. I like Deshaun Watson. I like Clemson football. I actually been to a game there at Death Valley, and actually got to touch the Frank Howard's rock. If you know what I'm talking about, you're a real college football fan. Anyway, if you've got a thought on that, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Fun time of year for sure. Let's get into our What Were You Thinking nominees. We've got a few. First one I want to give, well, staying in the realm of sports, there is a country music singer by the name of Justin Moore. I listen to classic country, so I'm not as familiar with his stuff, though I have heard that song, "You Look Like I Need a Drink Right Now." Anyway, Justin Moore, evidently an Arkansas native and a fan of the Arkansas Razorbacks, and like many fans of the Arkansas Razorbacks, not happy with native son Malik Monk, who grew up in Arkansas, whose brother played for Arkansas, and Malik Monk, who, as a high school basketball player, after everyone assumed he was an Arkansas lock, chose to take his talents on the road to Lexington, Kentucky and play for the University of Kentucky Wildcats. And Arkansas coming to Rupp Arena to play Malik Monk, of course, Malik Monk having just a breathtakingly great freshman year, hanging 47, which will be his only year in college, no doubt. Anyway, so Justin Moore on Twitter deciding to take a little shot at Malik Monk for his decision to play for Kentucky and not for the home state, Arkansas. He tweets this, "No matter what, I'd rather have Arkansas on my chest than to have something I have no clue about. Woo pig, be about your heritage. Hashtag it matters." So Justin Moore calling out the 18-year-old Malik Monk. Well, I don't think Justin Moore realized, you know, there's the old saying, don't poke the bear. The Kentucky basketball fan base is pretty big and pretty vocal, and he poked the bear, and he got rained down on Twitter by Kentucky fans for him taking his shot at Malik Monk. Even got into it, you know, talking about how many records he sold and back and forth with Kentucky fans, till finally, after his publicist probably grabbed a hold of him and talked some sense into him, he has since deleted the tweets, and he offered this apology the next morning. "All the smack talk was in good fun last night. In all sincerity, good win, UK fans, and best of luck the rest of the way. Love the state of Kentucky." Mm-hmm. Ain't that easy, Justin Moore? I think he's going to be in concert in the state sometime soon. We'll see what the crowd reaction is. What were you thinking, man? We'll be back with one more nominee and a winner on the other side of the break. Again, my question of the day, what's your favorite Dave Matthews song? He's 50 today. 573-4-BREAD-4. Call or text. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
We're right at the bottom of the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show here on this Monday, January 9th, 2017. My question of the day on the 50th birthday of Mr. Dave Matthews, what is your favorite Dave Matthews song? And you can chime in by calling or texting 573-4-BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Or you can post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter, Mike Allen Show the handle. Some of you have gone to Facebook and said, let's see, Pruitt says his favorite is Don't Drink the Water. Andy says, used to have to scrape up a $5 cover charge in the early 90s at Ole Miss to see the Dave Matthews Band. Shortly after that, saw them open for the Grateful Dead in Las Vegas in 95. Quickest rise to stardom musically I've ever seen. Talented musicians throughout the band. Leo said, I've seen Dave Matthews Band live numerous times. Don't really have a favorite song, but the best recording and live show was the acoustic material with Tim Reynolds. Nicole says, You and Me, but I love them all. Rebecca, Crush, but it brings back weird memories. Okay, so we'll share some more on those a little bit later. Obviously, a very popular question of the day, Dave Matthews Band. Very popular. But like I said, that's not really my wheelhouse, so I'll leave it up to you guys. As I said, my favorite song is from the film Because of Winn-Dixie. Did get another comment. Let's see, this is on the show's Facebook page. Andy says, Stay or Crush. But here what Lindsay wants to chime in. Lindsay says, I never listened too much to them, but my husband always loved them. She says, but going back to your Friday show and your kid throwing up spaghetti thing, I was talking about the time my wife happened to be out of town. You know how kids always, you know, tend to wake mom up rather than dad up if they have the option, if they have some problem during the night. But it just happened to be my wife was out of town. And we had had spaghetti for dinner. And my two boys here at the time were probably like, I don't know, 6 and 4, sharing a bunk bed, or 5 and 4. And my son, who slept on the top bunk, woke me up because he had thrown up spaghetti. The worst scene I've ever encountered. I came into the bedroom. He had thrown up generous amounts, down the side of the wall, down onto the bottom bunk. It was actually on his sleeping brother's face, the noodles, and it was the most rancid smelling stuff I've ever experienced in my life. So that, well, you know, it just happened to be the night my wife was out of town. Anyway, Lindsay referencing that, she said, I started laughing so hard while driving to work, I literally had tears running down my face, but truthfully, I know I married the right man for me because he has agreed to take care of the puke if I take care of the poop for our kids. This is the kind of thing that should be included in vows. You know, there is a third bodily function. You know, who takes care of the pee? Okay, anyway. I have serious puke anxiety, even if it comes from my own children. Your story's the kind of thing nightmares are made of for me. But yeah, believe me, it was no fun. That's pretty good, Lindsay. Yeah, write that into the vows. That'd be good. Who has which duty? And that's D-U-T-Y, by the way, not duty.
He said duty.
Anyway, back to our What Were You Thinking nominees. We gave Justin Moore, one of the nominees, the country artist, for calling out the 18-year-old Malik Monk on Twitter simply for choosing a different college than he wanted. Our second nominee, Go Dumb or Go Home, as we like to say on this. This from Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania, the hometown of Joe Willie Namath. Anyway, a local newspaper received an apparently fake obituary Wednesday for a 21-year-old woman who is wanted by police for theft-related charges. The Beaver County Times reports that an obituary for a 21-year-old Anastasia Klein was submitted to the Times via email Wednesday night. The obituary, which was sent from an email address containing Klein's full name, claimed she died unexpectedly on Tuesday afternoon. The obituary included Klein's grandmother's phone number for contact information, and when the Times reached out, her grandmother said Klein was not dead. Oops. The Times also reached out to the local coroners and medical examiner's office, and they were unable to verify Klein's death. Evidently, Klein is facing charges for forgery, bad checks, and theft. So, the old fake obit, not going to fly. But the winner, and this is so horrible because it's captured on camera. You would think an ordinarily a beautiful scene. A man standing with his fiancée next to a waterfall, proposing, popping the question. But tears of immense happiness quickly turned to sorrow in just a matter of seconds. Isaiah Adams was in the course of popping the big question to his girlfriend, Grace, there in Thurmont, Maryland, in front of the waterfall at the Cunningham Falls State Park, when he went to place the ring on her finger, and it accidentally slipped out of his hands and into the dark, rushing waves of the waterfall. Inside Edition obtained the heart-wrenching video where the couple and people watching nearby are heard screaming in shock, OMG! The news magazine briefly spoke to Grace in a recent interview. I was crying with happiness, but then I was crying with fear at the same time. I looked up and his face was just shock. She said she and her fiance plan to move forward with their wedding and are choosing to stay optimistic. I mean, what else are you going to do? But the ring was never located. So learn from his mistake, gentlemen. If you're popping the question, don't do it in front of a waterfall. Anyway, if you got one that you want to nominate, I'd love to hear from you. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. That's MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Well, we're T-minus, 11 days away now from the inauguration of Donald J. Trump as the 45th president of the United States. I still can't believe that we're saying that. It's going to be interesting. Let's just put it that way. I know there are some who think this is the greatest thing ever. I think there are some who think it's the worst thing ever. All I will say is it's going to be interesting. We'll put it that way. Especially if he continues to use Twitter the way he has used, because it's just unlike anything that you will have ever seen from a sitting president of the United States. I'll give you a case in point. Friday morning, at like 4:45 a.m., Donald Trump. Now, I'm usually up at 4:45 a.m. I'm getting ready for this show. But Donald Trump, I don't know when he sleeps. Donald Trump, who is about to be inaugurated president, who has gotten, in a sense, the ultimate affirmation of the American people, the highest office in the land. And what's he thinking about? He's getting ready to take over leadership of the most powerful nation in the free world, with all its myriad complexities, issues, foreign policy dilemmas, and so forth. What? Surely he's got enough on his plate to think about. He tweets out at 4:45 a.m. Wow, the ratings are in and Arnold Schwarzenegger got swamped or destroyed by comparison to the ratings machine, DJT. So now he's speaking about himself in the third person? Is he Jimmy from Seinfeld? Anyway, so much for being a movie star, and that was season one compared to season 14. Now compare him to my season one, but who cares? He supported Kasich and Hillary. I'm telling you, who does that? That's crazy. Anyway, so it's going to be interesting. Like I said, first State of the Union address is going to be worth the price of admission. Here we go. This morning when I got up, that there were, of course, comments. The Golden Globe Awards were last night, and there were comments about Donald Trump made and, shots taken. I didn't watch the Golden Globes, but that's what I read this morning. And I wondered, how long is it going to take before Mr. President-elect comments? Let's see. He says this from 12 minutes ago. Meryl Streep, one of the most overrated actresses in Hollywood, doesn't know me, but attacked me last night at the Golden Globes. She is a Hillary flunky who lost big. For the 100th time, I never mocked a disabled reporter. Would never do that, but simply showed him dot, dot, dot. So I guess there's more to come. Golly. Like I said, this should be interesting, to say the least. Some things I want to get into when we come back from the break. I'm going to tell you about how some martyrs showed up in my shower. As I said, we were originally going to have Alan Alday on the program this morning, my good friend and a behavior analyst. He texted me about 3:30 in the morning, one of his children. You know, they've got two and a third on the way. One of their children sick last night, throwing up. Back to that whole question of Lindsay about who takes care of the puke and who takes care of the poop. It must be a team effort there at the Alday household. And, of course, hopefully he's doing the lion's share because his wife is expectant not too far away. Anyway, pray for their family. Pray that their son feels better and that Alan is. He texted me at like 3:30 in the morning, still hadn't gone to bed, said, I don't think I'll make the show today. So keep them in your prayers, and hopefully we'll get him back on the show soon. We'll be back in just a minute. If you've got a question or a comment, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show. Get my question of the day. 50 years old today is Dave Matthews of the Dave Matthews Band. Happy birthday. What's your favorite Dave Matthews song? A couple comments we've gotten more on Facebook, which, by the way, is an option, Facebook or Twitter. Mike Allen Show is the handle. We've got Todd says Satellite, and David says Grace Is Gone from Busted Stuff. They're best all around, too, in my humble opinion. So if you want to chime in, you can call or text 573-4BREAD-4, email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. I don't know much about Dave Matthews. I don't know if he's got a faith background or not. I need to check that out. Anyway, was talking about Donald Trump responding to the Golden Globes, and I said there was a to be continued at the end of his tweet, a series of three tweets, actually, about Meryl Streep, who I guess made some what he viewed as disparaging comments at the Globes. I didn't watch it. His full tweet in three tweets says this: Meryl Streep, one of the most overrated actresses in Hollywood, doesn't know me but attacked me last night at the Golden Globes. She is a Hillary flunky who lost big. For the 100th time, I never mocked a disabled reporter, would never do that, but simply showed him groveling when he totally changed a 16-year-old story that he had written in order to make me look bad. Just more very dishonest media, ! Like I said, the guy has ridden Twitter to the White House, so I guess no reason to stop now. You know, as I've told you before, and I'm not through talking about it yet, and I'm hoping the movie's going to come out here locally. I got this book, Silence for Christmas, by Shusaku Endo, the Japanese Catholic author. The book came out in 1966. He's since deceased. But it's a very haunting book. It continues to rattle around in my mind, and looking forward to having Tim Stanley, who was supposed to be with us on the show Friday. We had some communication issues. He's going to be with us tomorrow morning to talk about his experience. My friend, British journalist and historian, Tim Stanley, his experience watching the film, which tells the story again of these two Portuguese Jesuit priests who are compelled to enter into Japan because to find out the fate of their mentor, Father Ferreira. Word had reached Rome where they were studying that he had turned away from the faith under the intense persecution in Japan against Christians in the 17th century, really an attempt by the Japanese leaders to purge the nation of this foreign Western religion and to protect Japanese culture, which they saw, I think, the Christian faith as an instrument of European imperialism in many ways. And so these priests go into Japan in secrecy, not only to minister to the peasant Christians who are there, administer the sacraments, those who live in fear of being rounded up and tortured for the faith, but also to find out what happened to their beloved mentor, Father Ferreira. And of course, the story primarily centers on one of the priests, Father Rodriguez, who ends up being captured and presented with terrible choices in terms of whether or not to turn from the faith. But this story has continued to rattle around in me, particularly asking myself how much I would be willing to suffer for my faith. And so I had an interesting experience a few days ago. It was the coldest day of the year, two or three days ago. And, I was getting in the showers before, early in the morning before this show. It's still dark outside. And as I was getting ready to get into the shower, our dogs, who kind of stay right there by next to our back door, which is right there next to our bathroom door, our dogs were restless, needing to answer nature's call. So as I had been preparing to get in the shower, I reached over to open the back door to let the dogs out, kind of leaning out from the bathroom. And when I opened the door to let the dogs out, an Arctic blast of wind came right across my skin just as I was preparing to get into the shower. It was like, woo, wow, that's cold. Made me hasten ever more to get into the steamy shower that was already running. So I got into the shower, and typically the deepest thoughts that I have in the shower that time of morning are trying to hold the bottle I'm holding at the farthest length possible from my eyes so I can discern whether it says shampoo or conditioner on it. I don't understand why they don't put those letters in more bold and large print for old people like me. Anyway, that's usually my deepest thought. But for some reason, when I climbed into the shower after having that blast of cold air against my skin, it made me think about, the story that I had heard before. I couldn't actually put my, I actually couldn't articulate the name, but it was these martyrs who died for the faith of exposure. And so a little bit later, I looked it up and found out we're talking about the 40 martyrs of Sebaste. These were Roman soldiers in the early 4th century who I guess were rumored to have been Christians, and they were tortured for it. They were made to go stand in bitterly cold weather on a frozen pond naked, unless they would recant their faith. And these 40 martyrs of Sebaste went out there on the ice. And to make it even more cruel, while they were on the ice naked, they prepared warm baths within their just yards away from where they were freezing in case they wanted to get some relief. And so 39 of the 40 held fast, one caved and went and got into the warm water. But according to the story, one of the Roman soldiers who was not a Christian was so impressed at their level of devotion that he himself went and stripped down off his clothing and his uniform and went and stood with them and perished with them, making the 40 martyrs complete in their numbers again. But thinking about it, I was in the shower. I'd felt that blast of cold against my skin. I'd been reading Silence and about martyrdom and torture and fidelity to the faith and apostasy and all the rest. And I thought to myself, wow, how long would I last? Seriously, in that situation. You know, I think when I have thought about martyrdom in the past, I've either thought about it in terms of, dying sort of instantly and unsuspectingly for the faith. You know, maybe you are in a mass when a terrorist decides to blow up a bomb or some random shooter comes in. And it isn't really a matter of choice. You simply die. Or I had thought about it more along the lines of an instantaneous decision. Tell me whether or not you're a Christian, if you are, I'll shoot you dead right here. And I thought, I guess, and it's maybe even at times presupposed that in those situations, in the sort of safety of academic speculation, thought, oh yeah, well, in that situation, I could die for my faith. But could I be tortured? It made me think of this. There's a short story, and I haven't read the whole thing, but I've certainly heard some of the quotes from Flannery O'Connor, the great Southern Gothic Catholic writer who died very young herself. But she has a short story called A Temple of the Holy Ghost. And in that, she writes of a young girl who, I guess, was realistic in her own self-evaluation in terms of her willingness to suffer. In the short story, O'Connor writes, the child decided she would have to be a saint because that was the occupation that included everything you could know, and yet she knew she would never be a saint. She did not steal or murder, but she was a born liar and slothful, and she sassed her mother and was deliberately ugly to almost everybody. She was eaten up also with the sin of pride, the worst case. She made fun of the Baptist preacher who came to the school at commencement to give the devotional. She would pull down her mouth and hold her forehead as if she were in agony and groan, "Father, we thank thee," exactly the way he did, and she had been told many times not to do it. But then O'Connor writes this, she could never be a saint, but she thought she could be a martyr if they killed her quick. I'm right there. She could stand to be shot, but not to be burned in oil. She didn't know if she could stand to be torn to pieces by lions or not. Anyway, great insight, because that's what I felt was I was thinking about the martyrs of Sebaste in the shower, having just been blasted by cold air, that I'd never make it, only by the grace of God. And anyone who thinks they could be a martyr for the faith, apart from the grace of God and a supernatural gift of faith and strength in the midst of those circumstances, is fooling themselves. But here's the thing, right? We can prepare. We may never face that, but we are called daily to those smaller sacrifices that groove our hearts and our spirits to prepare to make the even greater ones. And so that's, even this day, you're going to have an opportunity to deny yourself for the sake of someone else, for the sake of being a disciple. Even in those little things, those small, tiny tortures, will we be faithful? We'll be back with a new hour. This is the Mike Allen Show.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.